Okay, Senator Saxog, whenever you are ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today we're presenting SC 9297-6. This will become the Omnibus State Department's Veterans Affairs Bill. There's a lot to go over on the spreadsheet, and we certainly are planning on getting through today. This bill appropriates roughly $1 billion, about a third of the total state budget. We're pretty close to target here, and I think we've done pretty well. With that, I'm going to ask Kevin Lundeen to explain and review the spreadsheet.
Thank you. Members should have a couple copies of spreadsheets in your packets. There should be a change item spreadsheet. I'm not going to talk from that one. And then there's a longer, more detailed one. And I will be talking from that one. And starting on the fourth page in there, the first three pages are just kind of a summary. Agency-level summary of general fund. But the more detailed starts on page four.
Mr. Lundeen, could I ask you to talk a little more directly into the mic? Yeah.
Okay. So taking a look at the top of the page, we start with the budget for the legislature, and there is an increase to both the Senate and the House of approximately 9% over the base. And I should point out in the appropriation article, there is a rider under the House of Representatives. This is the usual rider we have that allows them to solicit revenues for some of their print media and broadcast activities. Next, moving down to the LCC, and if you turn to the next page, the change items are at the top of the spreadsheet.
Okay, hopefully that works better. And so taking a look at the top, the LCC change items, the first is an operating budget increase for the LCC, and this is for all of the offices with the exclusion of the Office of the Legislative Auditor. And that is also a 9% increase. The Office of the Legislative Auditor was given a higher increase of approximately 14% added to the base. And then also included is a reduction for the repeal of the Sunset Commission, which is contained in Article 2. And that's a reduction of $278,000 for the biennium from the base. And if you look in the appropriation article, there is a rider that we've had in previous years that's dealing with a legislator's forum, and this is money from the base that has been in there for a number of years. There is also another rider in there that's authorizing the LCC to provide a loan to the NCSL conference that will be held here, and the language says it's anticipated that this will be paid back to the LCC. Moving down next on the spreadsheet, under the governor's office, there is no monetary changes to the office. There are a couple riders under the appropriation that have typically been there in the past. The first is dealing with the necessary expenses of $19,000 a year, and as I said, that's been there for quite a long time. The second rider is dealing with when the governor's office pays for staffing from transfers from agency appropriations. And so this just puts a limit on how much the governor's office can do for that. And if you look on the spreadsheet, that refers to the special revenue fund line there of $720,000 a year. And then it does have some reporting requirements back to the chairs. Moving down next to the state auditor under the change items, the audit practice fund was not included in this bill. This was a bill that we heard and also a governor's recommendation. And then moving down to line 92, there's another change item, a staff retention request that the state auditor had and the governor included. That is not included. And then there's another staff retention under the Pension Oversight Division, and that also was not included in this bill. Moving to the next page, there's just another breakout from the audit practice enterprise fund under operations management, which was not included in this bill. Moving down to line 116 under the job Z, the job C oversight is moved from the state auditor to the legislative auditor, and this was a governor's rec and also a bill of Senator Ress. So the savings are reflected there. And then under the non-general fund change items, Senator Saxhog had Senate File 255, which was also a governor's rec, dealing with the small cities and towns accounting system. And if you recall, we did change the language a bit. We had an amendment when we heard the bill in division. And so that's what's accounting for the difference in expenditures from the 310 to the 250. And then moving down to the Attorney General, there is no change in the base appropriation. And there is a rider in the bill that we've had in previous years, about a $65,000 a year transfer to public safety. And that's a grant for the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. And if we turn over to the next page of the spreadsheet, we get to the Secretary of State, starting on line 167. And we get down to the change items, down on 183. There was a request to provide general fund money to replace the HAVA expenditures. That was not fully funded in this bill. That was funded at $500,000 a year. The reduction for efficiencies that was included in the governor's recs were included in this bill. And then there was also funding for the deficiency request for the redistricting lawsuit. And we've also appropriated the remaining HAVA funds. And there are riders under the Secretary of State's appropriation in the bill that appropriates all of the remaining HAVA funds, and then also a rider dealing with the redistricting case. Moving down to line 197 is the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. And turning over to the next page, included in there is the request that the governor included of $311,000 a year, and that brings up the general fund budget for the agency to $1 million a year. And then moving down to the investment board, there were no changes in their base. And then we move down to administrative hearings. And I should point out, the first is the campaign complaints. This is a base appropriation, but there is a rider in there drawing attention to that in the appropriation article. And then the change items, there were two change items that administrative hearings had requested and the governor included for deficiencies with campaign violations and data practices. So those are included. There was no change to the workers' compensation base. And then moving down to, the Office of Enterprise Technology on line 245. I should note there is language, which we'll get to later, that does change the name of the office to Minute. And if we turn to the next page, we get to the change items on line 255. These were two reductions that the governor had included that OET felt they could do with the IT consolidation. And so we've taken those savings there. And then under the non-general fund, we have included the e-government public-private partnership, and this language was also contained in Senate File 804. And then there was another item that OET came in recent days and had a request for some cash flow to deal with the IT consolidation and some of the upfront costs that they would have before they got all of their agency billing revenue in. And there is a rider in the bill that gives them this authority to borrow this and then to pay it back within the biennium. So there would be no cost within the biennium to this, and they're required to borrow and then pay back with interest to the funds. And I should point out in the appropriation article, there is another rider which we've had in a number of the previous bills, just directing OET not to charge fees for the public non-commercial educational television broadcasts. And then if we move down to the Department of Administration, and we get down to the change items under lien on line 285. This was the governor's recommendation to provide more funding for this program. We get down to the EQB, the Environmental Quality Board. We have picked up the transfer there, so the money is being transferred out of the admin budget and will be transferred over to PCA. So we're showing the reduction to admin's budget here. And the actual language making this transfer is not contained in this bill, but it rather will be in Senator Tomasoni's budget bill. And we do make a reference to it under the appropriation that this transfer will be taking place. Right now it's just Senate file XXX since we don't have the Senate file number, but we'll fill that in later. And moving on to the next page, the next change item is to the SMART program down on line 332. This is the governor's rec for additional funding for this program that helps small agencies. And then if we move down to line 350, there is a one-time appropriation in here on line 351 for the Nellie Stone Johnson bust. This was a bill of Senator Latz that we heard recently. And the language from the bill is contained as a rider in the appropriation section. Moving to the next page, and under the financial management and reporting at line 366, the department had requested funding for an internal auditor, and the governor had included that in his budget. We have included the funding for that position here. Moving down to fiscal agent, the in lieu of rent appropriation is here, and we also have a rider in there for that. That's a base appropriation. There was no change. Should point out that the capital preservation, rent loss, and relocation funding is not contained in this bill. It was decided that that would be moved over to be considered by the Capital Investment Committee with the other funding for the renovation of the Capitol. And then moving down to public...
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator West.
Where is that carried in the House bill?
My understanding is the House had moved it over to their Capital Investment Committee as well. And then moving down to public broadcasting, we have put increases in here. Public television, there is an increase to the equipment grants, bringing those up to a total of 605 for the biennium, and the matching grants were increased, bringing the total up to $3.389 million for the biennium. And public radio, the AMPRs, the community service grants were also increased, bringing up the total for the biennium to $898. I should point out that all the new money that's going into public broadcasting is basically one-time money in the first year and does not become part of the base. And then under AMPRs, there is the grants base with an increase of 130, which brings that up to $314,000 for the biennium. I should point out we do have riders specifying all this in the bill. And then we also have included language in the rider that makes a couple of the radio stations on the Leech Lake Reservation, the Boys Fort Reservation, and the White Earth Reservation eligible for these grants, even though they may not meet all the requirements that are in the statute governing these grants. And then we move down to NPR. There is an increase of $500,000 in the first year, and then also the infrastructure support that the governor had included. This was, I think, for the alert system, and that at $120,000 a year that went into the base, that is included as the governor included it in his budget. And then we move down to the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board, and there was no change in their base appropriation. And then we move down to Minnesota Management and Budget.
Madam Chair.
And Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Mr. Lundin, just a small question, but why is the Johnson bus not with the CAP board and its administration?
The language of Senator Latz's bill appropriated the dollars to the Department of Administration.
Okay, having just spent years working on a memorial, seems to me that normally the CAP board has jurisdiction over things like that, don't they?
It does.
Senator Rest.
Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, the language will indicate that the CAP board has to approve any design and so forth. But sometimes those projects come with private money rather than public money, and private money also to maintain, particularly if it's something outside. But there is the oversight language in the actual language of the bill, as I recall. And is that in the writer?
Yeah, I think if you look in the actual bill language we have on page 7, starting on line 12, going down to line 23, there is the language there, and it does reference the CAP board and the Historical Society.
But, Madam Chair and Senator Cohen, I think it is a good thing to, as the bill moves forward into the full Finance Committee, to make sure that the regular procedures with regard to new sculpture or memorials are consistently followed. So I would certainly encourage that.
Madam Chair, again, not a big deal, and I recognize that there's been the combination of admin along with the CAP board, but maybe we could just check as to what we've done in the past relative to the actual placement.
Madam Chair, sometimes, Senator Cohen, the money is all private. Sometimes it's requested to be. So I think that's one of the differences in terms of what the regular order is.
Mr. Lundin.
Okay, so moving down to line 450, Minnesota Management and Budget, and I guess if we turn to the next page, we line 465, deal with some of the change items. The first is the statewide budget systems development, and this was working with BPAS and the capital budget and fiscal notes going forward. The appropriation is included, and we have a rider in there that is the language from the governor's bill. The language on a lot of these IT projects does have transfer language that transfers the IT portion of the dollars to the Office of Enterprise Technology. The second initiative is the results management initiative. This, too, is funded at the governor's recommended level. And then if we move down to line 490, there's a couple of change items under the human resource management. The first is dealing with the compensation council recs, which are included as an article in this bill. And this bill does provide $2.5 million of general fund dollars that are appropriated to the commissioner of MMB to then transfer to state agencies based on the compensation council increases. And these dollars only are applicable to the executive branch and the constitutional officers. This does not include legislative pay increases. And the rider in the bill also does provide $200,000 of that amount can be used to conduct the compensation study that's in Article 7. And it directs that the commissioner then can put these forward, and these dollars will then go into the base. And then we also have additional language saying there if there's any additional dollars of that $2.5 million that are that are remaining after the transfers have taken place and the Compensation Council recs are fulfilled, that the commissioner then may transfer these to state agencies to cover any of the increased costs due to the collective bargaining agreements that were recently approved.
Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundeen, references here on the spreadsheet, Senate File 1534. Who is the author on that bill?
That was Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas. Thank you.
And then the next change item is the Enterprise Human Resources Capacity. That is funded at the governor's level. The Enterprise Talent Management System, that the funding for that project was not included in this bill. And then I think if we turn the page, the next page, you get to the Department of Revenue. And the change items then are on the following page. And the first one is a reduction for the tax system simplification and efficiency. This was governor's rec, and so those savings were picked up in this bill. There was also a proposal to increase the taxpayer assistance grants. Currently, there's $200,000 in the base, so that does increase it by $200,000 each year, so it would be $4,000 each year for the taxpayer assistance grants. And there is a rider in the appropriation article dealing with that. The next item is the electronic wage levy payments and disclosures. This results in a reduction to the base of the agency. And the language for this is included in Article 6 of the bill. And then the governor also included property tax technical grants. And so that is included here, and the language for that is also included in the bill, the same language that was in the governor's bill. Moving down next, we get to the Gambling Control Board. There is no change in the base appropriation there. The Minnesota Racing Commission, there is no change in the appropriation there, and both of those appropriations are from the special revenue account. The next item is the state lottery. We don't actually make an appropriation there for their operating budget, but rather we put a cap on their statutory operating expenses, and so that's what the $30.5 million a year represents, and that is the governor's rec. The next item is the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and there is an increase of $30,000 a year there to the base budget. And then moving down to the Black Minnesotans Council, there is a operating budget increase there of $125,000 a year. The Chicano Latino Affairs is also increased $125,000 a year. The Asian Pacific Council is increased $125,000 a year. And then on the next page, we get to the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council. That is also increased $125,000 a year to the base. And there is a rider in the appropriation article. This is a rider we've had in the last few years. And basically, it's just earmarking the money that goes for the cultural resources specialist. But that is base money that it's referring to. excuse me. The next item we get to is the Minnesota Historical Society. And there's a change item there on line 672. This is to expand education outreach. This was an item that when the Historical Society was before the committee that they had mentioned they were interested in more money for. And there is a language in the bill that talks about it's for curriculum workshops, materials, and summer internships for at-risk youth. And then if we move down, excuse me, to the fiscal agents, there is no change in the base for the Minnesota International Center. The Minnesota Air National Guard is increased by $20,000, bringing them up to $34,000 a year. And then I should point out one difference on the tails. I guess I didn't pull the full 20 over, so that should not be 11, but should be 20. It's supposed to be a base increase of 20. Then moving down to the Hockey Hall of Fame, there's an increase there of $32,000 a year, bringing them up to $100,000 each year of the biennium, and that also goes into the base. The Military Museum.
We're on page 14 of the thicker full document.
And this was a bill of Senator Gazelka's. I forgot to note the Senate file here. I'll fix that. But anyway, so his bill had asked for a total of $170,000. What is included here is money for the halftime archivist that the Military Museum had come in and talked to us about. And there is $60,000 provided in each year of this biennium, but it is only for this biennium. And then there is a restoration of the base, bringing it back up to $100,000, and that continues on into the tails. And then there is another change item. There is no change to Farm America, but there is money earmarked for the Minnesota Forest History Center. And actually, I placed that in the wrong place on the spreadsheet, so we will have to move that up because the Minnesota Forest History Center is actually one of the historical centers under the control of the Historical Society. So it's just merely moving the rider in the bill to a different place. And then we move on to the Minnesota Arts Board. And there is one small change there under the Regional Arts Council on line 749 of $61,000 a year, which brings up the total for the Regional Arts Council to $2.2 million a year, and that goes into the base. And if we move to the next page, we get to the Humanities Center. The operating budget increase that the governor included is included here. And then there's also a one-time grant for Everybody Wins. This was a bill that we heard from Senator Pappas. And there is a rider under the Humanities Commission for this grant. And then next we get to the Board of Accountancy. And there's an increase in the appropriation. This is the language from Senator Rest's bill that has been included in Article 4. And so the appropriation is increased as they requested on the fiscal note that we had for that bill. There was no change to the Board of Architectural and Engineering. Moving down to the Board of Cosmetology, there are a couple of change items there. The first is the continuing education requirements. This is Senator Johnson's bill that we heard, and there was a small increase in costs for them. I think it was related to some computer programming costs. And then there was also Senator Metzen's bill, which we heard, Senate File 1106, which I neglected to put the Senate file there. And so they had requested a budget increase of $300,000 a year, and this language is contained in Article 4. I should point out that the revenue that's associated with this will be showing at the bottom of the spreadsheet. We moved down to the Board of Barber Examiners, and we heard a bill there, Senate File 1055. This was Senator Peterson's bill, and then there's an increase in their appropriation of $60,000 a year, and this language, too, is included in Article 4 of the bill. Next, we get to the contingent accounts. There is no change there. Moving down, tort claims, no change. And then we get to the retirement fund appropriations we have there. These appropriations are as forecasted, and so there's no change to these amounts. These are all what the base level appropriations from the February forecast were. We get down next to the Department of Military Affairs. And the governor had no base changes to this agency. However, on the next page, on line 890, the language from the bill we heard the other day, Senate File 1124, dealing with the USS Minnesota Commissioning Grant for $200,000, is included here to the Department of Military Affairs. And then if we move down to the bottom of the page, we get to the Department of Veterans Affairs. And if we turn to the next page, at the top are the base appropriations for the various grants and that. And if we move down to the first is on line 953, this the governor in his bill set up a new special revenue account called the Support Our Veterans account. And this is where he was going to deposit license plate revenue from the license plates he proposed in his bill, and then also the lottery ticket revenue. This bill that we have does not set up that Support Our Veterans account and does not do the license plate. And so if we move down to the program level changes, and we've got riders for these items in the bill in the appropriation article. The first is the healthcare IT improvement, which is included at the governor's level of funding. And then the Southeast Minnesota Veterans Cemetery, this is the new cemetery in Fillmore County. That is included as the governor had requested it. The Honor Guard funding, this was included in the governor's bill, and this was also a bill of Senator Nelson's that we heard, Senate File 649. This is funded at the governor's level of funding. The county veteran services grants, there was a grant increase that was included in the governor's bill, and we also heard Senate File 536. This was Senator Chamberlain's bill, which funded the grants at a higher level. We have included the governor's level of funding here, and the language, the statutory language for this is in Article 5. Then there is an expansion to the GI Bill, and this is just the administrative cost for that. This is $100,000 a year, and these dollars stay with the Department of Veterans Services. There's a rider in there that references $200,000. There is $100,000 in the base that goes to the Office of Higher Education that's transferred over there for the GI Bill. And then the Gold Star program, this is funded at the governor's level. This also was included in Senate File 649, Senator Nelson's bill. And then for MACV grant increase, there is $500,000 in the base. For that, this is increasing it an additional $250,000. This is from Senate File 55, and there is language in there about the grant. It's talking about the $750,000 each year. However, the $250,000 of that is one time, so the base remains at $500,000. And there is also some language in the rider about this assistance is available to veterans who have resided in Minnesota for 1 year. And then as we move down, I should point out there's one other rider, standard rider we have in there that just states the base amount of money that goes to the veteran service organizations at $353 a year, and that's something that's been in there for years. So if we move down to the open appropriations change item, this is where the veterans lottery ticket that I talked about, that the governor had the money going into the Support Our Veterans. The language contained in this bill, there's language in Article 5 that makes a transfer into the existing Support Our Troops account and then appropriates all this money to the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. And there is also language contained we'll get to in Article 5 that kind of talks about how that'll work. But essentially, this is a forecasted program. That's why it's showing up under the open general fund rather than a direct appropriation of $840 in the bill. And then the next item, when we get down to the GI Bill, you can see the GI Bill expansion. And so this is not including the administrative costs that I talked about, which are directly appropriated. But this is a forecasted increase in the utilization of the GI Bill. And then if we turn to the next page, we get to the veterans' homes. And there's a change item there for the healthcare IT improvement. And then this was funded at the governor's level of funding. And I should point out that the money that we appropriate from the general fund to the vets' homes, once they get it, they transfer it into a special revenue fund, and there is some language that's been in the bill for years that does this, so that it is then together with the federal money they get and money they get from clients to support the operations of the homes. And we also did include a rider that the governor had. There wasn't any money attached to it, but it was about maximizing federal reimbursements. And then the other change item is down on line 1005. This is the cancellation of the Minnesota Ambulance Grant, which the governor had included in his bill. And so if we move then to the next page, down here are all the appropriation totals of the direct, and then the following page, if we move down to line 1035, deals with the changes of revenue to the general fund. As I had mentioned, the state auditor's audit practice enterprise fund is not included in this bill, so that is not showing up. And then we have the Department of Revenue, the continuous electronic payment. That brings in a little bit of revenue to the general fund of $3,000 starting in 2015. And then the three licensing bills that I talked about for the accountants, cosmetology, and barber examiners board, the revenue that brings in to the general fund, because that's deposited as a non-dedicated receipt, is shown there. And then moving down to the non-general fund items, which we went through these items that were included, the small cities and towns accounting system, that money goes into a special revenue fund. The OET, e-government, public-private partnership goes into a special revenue fund. And then we did not do the veterans license plate. The language dealing with the auto theft surcharge, which is changing or moving language from the Department of Public Safety to the Department of Revenue, and that fund sees a small increase in the tails of $100,000 a year. And so then moving down to the bottom, the total net spending in this bill is $924,465. And you can see we met our target. There is nothing on the bottom line for fiscal year 14 and 15, and there is a small amount remaining in the tails on the bottom line.
Okay, Senator Sexhug, would you like to adopt this spreadsheet?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would move to adopt the spreadsheet.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, spreadsheet passes. Senator Sexhug, would you like to discuss the spreadsheet or go over the language or any questions?
Well, I think that Mr. Lundin did an excellent job of going over the spreadsheet, and I would certainly stand for questions on the spreadsheet.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chair?
Senator Chamberlain.
Just to clarify, are we talking just spreadsheet, or are we opening the discussion up to the bill itself for just a spreadsheet?
In the spreadsheet, we can have the council go over the language of the bill.
Oh, so it'll be a separate thing?
Or we can do,
Madam Chair.
Whatever. Yes.
Yeah. If there are any other questions on the spreadsheet, I would move, or I wouldn't move, but I'd ask Ms. James to go over the document.
Senator Anderson, did you have? I couldn't tell if you were raising your hand. Okay. I couldn't tell if you were raising your hand. Okay. Ms. James.
Madam Chair and members. Just first a few sentences that will orient you to how the bill is organized, and then I'll go section by section. Article 1 of the bill, of course, is the appropriations. Article 2 is a repeal of the Sunset Commission. Article 3 are provisions for the state government operations, that's mostly a variety of bills that were heard in this division. Article 4 are some provisions relating to licensing boards, to the cosmetologists, to the barbers, and to the accountants boards. Article 5 is military affairs and veterans affairs provisions. Article 6 are some provisions for the Department of Revenue, and Article 7 is the Comp Council. So beginning with Article 2, on page 21, line 24, this article repeals the Sunset Act. The repealer is actually on page 24, beginning at line 16. The rest of the article are conforming provisions. The Sunset Commission was scheduled next year to review several of the very large agencies, the Department of Health, the Department of Human Services, the Department of Education, and some others. So then moving on to Article 3. Article 3 is the State Government Operations article. Section 1, which begins on page 24, line 25, authorizes the Secretary of State to accept funds from local government units to be used for technology projects to enhance the state's election system. Funds accepted under this section are deposited into a special revenue fund and then are appropriated to the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of State has a reporting requirement. In Section 2 of the bill, page 24, beginning on line 11, this authorizes the Secretary of State to accept individual gifts and grants from charitable foundations and from the federal government to be used for the confidentiality program. That's the Safe at Home program. Funds accepted under this section are deposited into a special revenue account and then are appropriated to the Secretary of State. In Section 3 of the bill, which begins on page 25, line 29, Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 255, and this permits the state auditor to charge a one-time user fee to cities, towns, and other government entities for the development and maintenance and distribution of their small city and town accounting software package. There's a special revenue account that's established for those fees, and the one-time fee that's charged in the section is credited to that account and then appropriated to the state auditor. If the software ceases to be offered by the auditor, any amount remaining in the account is refunded to the users. Section 4 begins on page 26, line 7. And this section, as well as sections 6 through 16, are provisions that were in Senator Wicklund's bill, Senate File 804. And this, beginning with Section 4, changes. These are a whole variety of provisions that were put in place for the Office of Enterprise Technology and also for the administration. They deal with procurement. Section 4 specifically changes when data submitted by a business to a government entity in response to a request for bids and proposals ceases to be private or public. It also changes when data... what data remains private or non-public when all responses for bids or proposals are rejected prior to completion of the selection process. Section 5 begins on page 27, line 11. And this requires state agencies to enter into service-level agreements with the Office of Enterprise Technology for the IT cost portion of the project, unless otherwise determined by the Commissioner of OET. Section 6 begins on page 27, line 17. This narrows the definition of resident vendor that's eligible for a preference over non-resident vendors for government contracts, for state government contracts. It adds the criteria that the vendor must have paid unemployment taxes or income taxes in Minnesota during the 12 calendar months prior to the submission of their bid or proposal. They must have a business address in Minnesota, and they must affirmatively claim resident vendor status in the bid or proposal. On page 27, beginning at line 28, is Section 7, and this changes when the formal responses to a solicitation for goods, service contracts, and utilities is made public. Section 8 begins on page 28, line 8. And this eliminates a requirement that the commissioner provide a yearly list to the governor and legislator of all contracts executed for professional or technical services. This provision doesn't go into effect until the commissioner of management and budget determines that all information required under current law is available to the public through the new statewide accounting and procurement system. Section 9 begins on page 29, line 10. And this restricts the requirement of that the Commissioner of Administration make certain determinations before entering into a service contract. And those determinations are that there is no current state employee able and available to perform the services called for by the contract. Under current law, the Commissioner must make that determination for every contract, but under this, with this change, the Commissioner only has to make that determination for contracts in excess of $5,000. On page 30, beginning at line 6, is section 10. This raises the threshold amount from $2,500 to $5,000, above which the acquisition of goods or services must follow the solicitation process that's in current law. Page 30, beginning at line 13, is section 11, and this exempts agencies from a requirement to include non-visual technology access standards in contracts for procurement of information technology. On page 31, beginning at line 4, is section 12. This allows certain notices to be advertised in a manner designated by the commissioner. Under current law, those notices have to be advertised in the state register, but this would give some flexibility, and this applies to proposals for design-build contracts with state agencies. Section 13 begins on page 32, line 14, and this is the same sort of provision about giving the commissioner flexibility about how to advertise to provide the notices necessary for soliciting bids, and this is for construction manager at risk contracts. On page 33, beginning at line 13, is section 14. This allows the Office of Enterprise Technology to charge a convenience fee to users of the North Star system and online government information services. On page 33, beginning at line 20, is section 15. This permits the Office of Enterprise Technology to enter into a contract with a private entity to maintain North Star and other online government information services that are available to citizens and businesses. The office is allowed to charge and allows the private entity to charge a fee of up to $2 per transaction. In setting the fee, the office is to consider the recommendation of a council that's established later in the bill. Receipts from the convenience fee are deposited into the North Star account, and then they're appropriated to OET for payment to any contracted private entities. And the Office of Enterprise Technology is required to report to the legislature each year about the convenience fee receipts. On page 34, beginning at line 10, is the establishment of the e-government advisory council. This provision is different than the bill was originally introduced. Some work was done on it in state and local government to help it meet the guidelines that the committee uses to make sure that organizations of this type, agencies, boards, councils, are established in a way that's that works. Subdivision 1 establishes the council. Subdivision 2 identifies the membership. There are 9 members. It includes the state information officer, and then 1 member from the House and 1 from the Senate, and 6 members appointed by the governor. And as noted earlier, the duties of this council will be to make recommendations about that convenience fee.
It's improving, so you know that's got to be good.
Moving on to section 17 of the bill, which begins on page 35, line 15. This section and the next section were in Senate File 191. They were Senator Rest's bill. This is the accountancy board bill. Section 17 changes audit requirements for the Dairy Council, shifting responsibilities for auditing from the state auditor to the legislative auditor. Section 18 does the same sort of thing with respect to Job Z. This section also eliminates the requirement that the Office of the State Auditor perform these audits annually and establishes a requirement that the auditor conduct these audits as resources allow. Section 19 is a revisor's instruction, and this effectively changes the name of the Office of Enterprise Technology to MN.IT, Minute Services, and then makes conforming changes. Article 4 begins on page 36, line 7. The sections 1 through 8 are from Senate File 1055, which was Senator Peterson's bill. And these are provisions for the Barbers Board. Section 1 defines comprehensive examination, which is used later in the bill. Section 2 adds new fees for retaking written exams to be a registered barber or to be an apprentice, to renew a student permit for a letter of verification and for reinspection. Section 3, beginning on page 37 at line 12, adds two practices to the list of those that constitute barbering: shaving the face or neck and applying lotions to hair. Page 37, beginning at line 25, is section 4, and it changes eligibility requirements for retaking a failed exam to obtain a certificate of registration to practice as a barber. Section 5 begins on page 38, line 7. And this specifies requirements to be a registered barber, to be an apprentice, including recent graduates from barber school, further study requirements for those who graduated more than 4 years prior to application, and testing requirements and registration for incarcerated individuals. Section 6 begins on page 39, line 4, and this adds the requirements to be an instructor of barbering by requiring certain coursework and requiring an applicant to be a registered barber. Section 7 begins on page 39, line 25, and this adds chemical waving to the required subjects that must be offered by a barber school. Section 8 begins on page 40, line 4. This requires an applicant for a barber license to prove identity with a government-issued photo ID. That ID must be presented both at application and on examination, and it eliminates a requirement that applicants submit two signed 5-inch by 3-inch photographs. Section 9 begins on page 40, line 17. It permits the barber board to conduct written exams beyond what's in current law, a limit of 6 examinations per year. Section 10, beginning on page 40, line 31, requires applicants for initial certificates of registration to provide proof of identity. These are applicants to be a barber, apprentice, or an instructor of barbering. Section 11 begins on page 41, line 4, and it eliminates certain constraints on granting registrations to barbers from out of state. Section 12 begins on page 41, line 17, and it eliminates certain constraints on granting registrations to apprentice barbers from other states. Section 13 is on page 41, beginning at line 27, and it requires barbers, apprentices, and instructors to display their photo near their workstation. Section 14, page 42, beginning on line 7, extends the period in which a barber, apprentice, or an instructor may renew a lapse registration without examination. This section adds administrative penalties if the lapsed or unlicensed status is discovered on inspection. Section 15 begins on page 42, line 23. It specifies penalties for a missing or lapsed shop registration, for an unlicensed or unregistered apprentice or barber first occurrence, and for second occurrence. Section 16 starts on page 43, line 1, and this permits cities to regulate barbershop hours. Section 17 is on page 43, beginning at line 7. It prohibits anyone from representing themselves as a barber or a barbershop, or to engage in barbering or operating a barbershop without a license, and violation is a petty misdemeanor. Section 18, which is on page 43, beginning at line 14, prohibits anyone not licensed by the barber board from placing a barber pole in a location that creates an impression that the business is a barber shop. And then there's a definition of a barber pole as a red or white or red and blue striped vertical cylinder commonly recognized as a barber pole. And then beginning with section 19, are provisions for cosmetology. And these sections are from 19 through 30 and 36 and 37. And these come from Senate Files 1106, Senator Metzen's bill, and from Senate Files 770, Senator Johnson's bill. Section 19 amends the definition of cosmetology to include specified services performed to body surfaces on the trunk of the body. Section 20 adds penalties for certain violations. That's on page 43, beginning at line 27. Section 21 is on page 45, beginning at line 12, and it defines when cosmetology school licenses expire. Section 22 is on page 45, beginning at line 20. It requires that specified testing be done by a board-approved provider. Section 23 begins on page 45, line 26, and it makes license renewals subject to meeting continuing education requirements. Section 24 is on page 45, beginning at line 30. It adds an acceptable test that qualifies non-residents for a cosmetology license in Minnesota. Section 25 is on page 46, beginning on line 16. And this creates the continuing education requirements. The requirements are 4 hours in a 3-year period. Section 26 begins on page 47 at line 19. It eliminates a requirement that a salon be inspected and licensed prior to commencing business. Section 27 is on page 48, beginning at line 1. It requires a school manager to maintain an active salon manager's license and requires an instructor in a school to maintain an active operator or manager's license in the area in which the instructor holds an instructor's license. Section 28, it begins on page 48 at line 6. This limits the hours of instruction to 10 hours per day per student in a cosmetology school. Section 29 begins on page 48 at line 10. It requires that a school give instruction within a licensed school building. Online instruction is permitted for board-approved theory-based classes. Practice-based classes may not be given online. Section 30 is on page 48, beginning at line 15. This is a series of prohibited uses. Subdivision 1 prohibits specified equipment and materials from being used more than once. Subdivision 2 prohibits the use of specified equipment intended to cut growths of skin. And Subdivision 3 prohibits the use of methyl methacrylate liquid monomers and fumigants in performing cosmetology services. Section 31 is on page 48, beginning at line 31. It changes the time period for renewal of certificates for certified public accountants issued by the Board of Accountancy. Oh, yes. So here we've moved into the Accountancy Board modification provisions, and these are from Senate File 86, which was Senator Rest's bill. And these will be sections 31 through 35 and 38. Yeah. So Section 31 changes the time period for renewal of certificates for certified public accountants issued by the State Board of Accountancy. Under current law, certificates may have a term of up to 3 years. This section requires that certificates be issued annually. So that this will match up their registration requirements for their licenses with their continuing education requirement reporting schedule. Section 32, it begins on page 42 at line 49 at line 22. It deletes obsolete requirements for applications for certificates that applied prior to 2006. Section 33, which is on page 50, beginning at line 14, requires the board to annually establish a fee schedule and sets caps for a variety of fees that the Board of Accountancy sets. Section 34 deletes obsolete provisions that applied prior to 2006, and that was on page 51, beginning at line 8. Section 35 is on page 51, beginning at line 33, and this allows a CPA firm to use part of a common brand name or network mark, including common initials, if the firm is a network firm, as defined in its code of conduct. Section 36 On page 55, beginning at line 22, is a good cause exemption, and this is for the Board of Cosmetology to adopt rules to accomplish what's in the bill earlier. Section 37 is a reviser instruction. This is on page 55, beginning at line 28, instructing the reviser of statutes to change all occurrences of manicurists to nail technicians. Section 38 is a repealer. This is on page 55, beginning at line 31. And this repeals obsolete statutes applicable to examinations and certifications that were prior to July 1, 2006, and it repeals a section of rules that sets fees, a section of rules that is obsolete because it relates to the three-year renewal cycle, and a section of rules that is obsolete because it applies to certifications prior to 2006. Moving on to Article 5, which begins on page 56 at line 2. This section, Section 1, is from Senate File 1119, which is Senator Sparks's bill. Section 1 permits employees to choose when during a calendar year to take their paid 15-day military leave and allows employees to take it all at once if they wish. Section 2 begins on page 56 at line 32, and this is Senate File 536. Sections 2 through 6 and 11 here will be Senate File 536, and that is Senator Chamberlain's bill dealing with the County Veterans Service Organization grants. Section 2 clarifies that commissioner for this section means the Commissioner of Veterans Affairs. Section 3 begins on page 57 at line 5 and changes the provisions for eligibility to receive, for a county to receive a Veterans Service Officer grant. A county that employs a newly hired but not yet certified County Veterans Service Officer is eligible for a grant for 1 year from the date of the officer's appointment. If the officer then does not receive certification within 1 year, the county becomes ineligible for a grant until the officer receives certification. Section 4, which begins on page 57, line 19, authorizes the Commission of Veterans Affairs to use any unexpended funds for this program to provide training and education for county veterans service officers. Section 5, which begins on page 57 at line 29, is a conforming change. Section 6, which is on page 58, beginning at line 3. I should point out that this section is not as it was in Senator Chamberlain's bill. This is the way it looked in the governor's recommendation in the governor's bill. These amounts are somewhat less than Senator Chamberlain had in his bill. But Section 6 makes changes to the amounts to be granted to counties under this program. The change establishes an annual grant for all counties of $5,000, and then in addition to that $5,000, eligible counties may receive additional amounts determined by the commissioner up to a specified cap that is based on population. And the section also establishes a grant of $2,500 to the Minnesota Association of County Veterans Service Officers to be used for training and accreditation for county veterans service officers and the cost associated with reintegration services. Section 7 begins on page 58 at line 32. And this is the governor's GI expansion bill. Section 7 and 8 are. Section 7 expands the eligibility for state assistance for post-secondary education to veterans who have served in the United States Armed Forces at any time, not just since September 11th. And the section also makes spouses and children of these veterans who have died or have a service-connected disability eligible for state assistance for post-secondary education if they meet requirements to receive certain federal education benefits. Section 8 begins on page 60 at line 20. And this exempts payments made under the Veterans Retraining Assistance Programs from those payments that that reduce a veteran's benefit under the Minnesota GI Education Assistance Program. Section 9, which begins on page 61 at line 12, is Senator Saxhog's bill, Senate File 628, and it establishes a veterans home in Beltrami County. Section 10 is from the governor's recs, and this establishes a special scratch-off lottery game. The section appropriates the money to the Support Our Troops account, it's the net proceeds from the game that are credited to that account, as Mr. Lundeen described earlier. Section 11 on page 62, beginning at line 11, is a repealer, and this is part of the County and Veterans Service Officer bill. Excuse me. The bill put these offices on an annual, or they get the grants annually instead of on a 3-year rotation, and so this repealer repeals the 3-year rotation. Then moving on to Article 6. This article includes two kinds of provisions. Some of them are related to an automotive theft prevention program. It's being moved from the Department of Public Safety and the statutes for the Department of Public Safety into the Department of Revenue. And then this section also includes a whole series of requirements that certain kinds of taxes be paid, be remitted electronically once a certain threshold is met. So Section 1 replaces a reference to a repealed section, and this is related to that auto theft program. Section 2, which begins on page 61 at line 1, changes a cross-reference to the auto theft program prevention surcharge. Then Section 3, which is on page 64, beginning at line 15, requires employees to file all wage levy disclosure forms and remit wage levy payments electronically. Sections 4 to 9, 12, and 13 deal with these specific taxes and the requirement that they be remitted electronically after a certain threshold is met. Under current law, these taxes have to be submitted electronically in the year that their threshold is met and one following year. And so this change requires that once that threshold is met in 1 year, those taxes have to be remitted electronically that year and all years thereafter. And the taxes that are involved here are... Section 4 deals with employer withholding of income taxes. Section 5, which is on page 66, beginning at line 31, is the sales and use taxes. Section 6 on page 69, beginning at line 5, are corporate taxes. Section 7, page 69, beginning at line 15, are the health care providers' taxes. Section 8 on page 69, beginning at line 23, are cigarette and tobacco products distributor taxes. Section 9, beginning on page 69, line 29, are the taxes for licensed brewers, importers, or wholesalers. Section 10 is, again, about the automobile theft prevention surcharge, and this is being, again, moved from the Department of Public Safety to the Department of Revenue, so it's not a new charge. Section 11 begins on page 71 at line 1, and that's back to the taxes. This is an automobile insurer's requirement to remit taxes electronically. Or actually, it's to require automobile insurers to file a tax return quarterly for the automobile surcharge. So that's back to the automobile surcharge provisions. Section 12, which is on page 71, beginning at line 10, is the insurance taxes that have to be remitted electronically. And Section 13 is a landfill tax that has to be remitted electronically. And that's on page 71, beginning at line 18. On page 71, beginning at line 26, is a repealer. The first paragraph of that repealer has to do with the transfer of the automobile theft recovery program from public safety to revenue. Paragraph B eliminates a lease purchase appropriation that's no longer required because it's been fully paid off. And that gets us to Article 7, which begins on page 72, line 1. And this is the Compensation Council bill, Senator Pappas' bill, Senate File 1534, with some changes. For one thing, this differs from that bill, the the bill as it came out of the Compensation Council because it leaves out the judiciary. Also, there are some tweaks to the language in the compensation plan study that's in here. But walking through this section by section, Section 1 that begins on page 72 at line 3 sets the salaries for members of the legislature at 33% of the salary of the governor. Section 2 on page 72 beginning at line 30 permits the governor to set the salary of agency heads anywhere within a salary range that has been approved by the legislature. Other appointing authorities still have to, as in current law, continue to seek interim approval of the Legislative Coordinating Commission and ratification by the legislature for setting salaries of agency heads. Section 3 on page 73, beginning at line 17, this is a salary increase. This is a provision that was put in place. Oh, and I should mention this is also different than the Compensation Council bill as it came out of the Compensation Council. This is an amendment that was made in this division when this bill was heard last week. And this provision, Section 3, increases the governor's salary annually and indexes it to a CPI. Section 4, salary limits. These are some conforming changes related to the Section 2 change that allows the governor to set salaries without approval. Section 5, excuse me, raises the maximum salary range for agency heads of most state agencies from the current level of 95% of the salary of the governor to 133% of the governor's salary. That's on page 73, beginning at line 29. Then Section 6, on page 74, beginning at line 24, does the same sort of increase for Group 2 heads of agencies, raising them from the current level of 85% of the salary of the governor to 120% of the governor's salary. Section 7, which is on page 75, beginning at line 2, establishes parallel requirements for the governor and for other appointing authorities, things that they're to consider when setting the salaries of agency heads. This is currently in law, but because of changes that separate out the governor and treats him differently for purposes of setting the salary head salaries from the other appointing authorities, this is sort of a conforming change for that. Section 8, which is on page 76, beginning at line 16, eliminates the salary of an agency head as the limit on salaries for employees of that agency. Salaries of employees instead will be limited by the maximum amount of the salary range that's provided in their collective bargaining agreements or compensation plans. Section 9 begins on page 76 at line 32, and this provides for unusual employment situations. It amends provisions that relate to the salary setting for these positions. The changes reflect that the maximum salary in these situations is the maximum of the position's salary range and not the salary of the agency head. Section 10, beginning on page 77 at line 24, is the compensation study. This requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to contract for a market analysis of compensation for managerial employees. And the word managerial is a change from the bill as it was heard in this committee last week and also from the way it came out of the Compensation Council. And then Section 11 on page 77, beginning at line 31, increases the salaries of constitutional officers by 3% on January 1st, 2015 and 2016. Section 12 is a repealer. This is an exception to the general rule that certain classes or that employees couldn't make more than the agency head, and so this exception is no longer needed since the rule is repealed or changed earlier. And then finally, Section 13 are effective dates for the Compensation Council provisions.
Thank you, Ms. James. Very good. Are there any questions? Senator Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is to the testifier, perhaps. Council. Thank you. Can you go back to page 28, Section 8?
We may want to have the Department of Administration to also come up to answer some questions if they're here. Thank you.
So maybe to the Department of Administration, can you first of all tell me if this particular section, without going into great depth, because I have some follow-up questions, has this section come up before this particular committee, and have we heard any testimony on this in this committee on this section?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kurt Yoakum with the Minnesota Department of Administration. Senator Champion, this bill was contained in a Senate file 804, I believe, with Senator Wicklund, that went through the State and Local Government Committee, where it passed out of there, and then I believe was referred to this committee. And I don't believe that this committee had a hearing on the bill.
Follow, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Champion.
So it looks like you are, so this is from Minnesota Statute 16C, which is for targeted group businesses. Is that right?
Mr. Yoakum.
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, Chapter 16C is state procurement law, and that's this, so this is amending a portion of Chapter 16C.
And would that include, Madam
Senator
Chair?
Champion.
And would that include state law that would also govern, for lack of a better word, targeted group businesses?
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, there are provisions in 16C that are, and I believe 16B, that are related to targeted group businesses, definitely.
Senator Champion.
Madam Chair, to the testifier, it looks as if you are deleting some reporting requirements that will require you to put together a report for all contracts, but leaving here, you know, final completion of contracts for over 25,000, then there's certain information that you all would still require some reporting around online. Is that right? And can you tell me the rationale as to why the Department of Administration believes that it's important to not report contracts under $25,000?
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, I do want to make sure that the committee sees both in Section 8, both page 28 and page 29, specifically lines 29.6 through 29.9. The Department of Administration, as Senator Champion referenced, is required to do a report on professional or technical contracts. We provide the report to the legislature once a year. It's approximately a 1,500-page list of professional or technical contracts, and has the name of the vendor, the name of the agency that provided it, and the dollar amount. And there might be one sentence description I'm trying to remember. Again, it's 1,500 pages. I believe that it's we submit it once a year. Pretty much out of date. I think the moment that we submit it for the fact that the next day or that day we're already issuing new contracts. The reason why I pointed out lines 29.6 through 29.9 is this section cannot become effective until once the with the state accounting and procurement system in statute, when that was authorized, there was also the requirement for a citizen portal, which allowed the general public to be able to access all state data, accounting data, procurement data in real time. And so the elimination of this report can only be effective once that's certified by MMB that data is capable of being pulled off by the public. And so, and that's why we're doing this. Again, this is, as I said, that this is a 1,500-page list, and the reason why we were doing that is we're trying to, we have limited resources at the department, limited staff time. This is a very considerable amount of time to actually put this information into a list format.
First, do you know how much that report costs, and is there a fiscal impact to this section here?
I can't tell you off the top of my head. I don't. I think we put a cost figure when we on the front page of the report when we do that. The MMB, when we submitted this as a legislative initiative, considered the cost savings under a threshold at which there would be a significant cost savings measured.
Thank you, Senator Champion.
Thank you. To the testifier, isn't it also true that based on what you're trying to delete here, is that any contract under $25,000, would that information that was once necessary to report to the legislature is no longer going to be reported to the legislature, even with your language in 29.6. Isn't that right?
Mr. Yocum.
Madam Chair, Senator Champion, you are correct in the fact that we would not be submitting a report to the legislature. Where I would disagree is that the information would be accessible daily or hourly on a real-time basis, which is not something that we actually have the capability to do at the moment. And so the reason why we were putting this forward was we actually thought that there would be an opportunity to make this a more robust process.
Senator Champion.
Madam Chair, let me just say that this is a portion in this particular bill that was not heard by this particular committee. We do not understand the impact of this language being in this particular bill. The testifier, if you look at Section 8 and you look at everything that they're deleting, the only thing that they're not deleting starts at 28.26, which says within 30 days of final completion of a contract over $25,000. So that is over $25,000. They only want to report that information, and they don't want to report anything under $25,000. And I'm not quite sure why, but if you look at the spirit or the text of this particular section, there's some information that isn't just as ancillary or as minute as the testifier is indicating, because it requires them to distinguish between contracts that are being issued for the first time and contracts that are being extended. It requires them to identify any contracts that were awarded that didn't follow the solicitation process. And there's a reason for that. That is because if you want to include women, people of color, veterans in the procurement process, we wanted to make sure that this information was coming forward and we could make sure that the Department of Administration was following their own process and making sure that they are following the law. And so I will have a conversation with my great chair to figure out what we should do about Section 8.
All right.
And so I don't know if it's the chair's feeling that perhaps we can delete things now or what the chair would like.
Mr. Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Champion, this has a number of stops before we're done. I just soon have a conversation with you and understand what we think we ought to do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's okay. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Senator Champion. Senator Chamberlain, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things. First, just an overall policy, kind of a thing we have to do here, policy and process again. And we had talked and we were promised that bills, finance bills would not have policy in it, and I've recently learned there are several tiers. We have Tier 1. If we were going to be pure finance here, not policy, we'd end after page 19. There's obviously policy in two different sections here, some parts with dollar amounts and that are policy, like the Sunset Commission, and then others that are just pure policy. So that's just a procedural and a process thing I just want to point out, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair. The first thing I'd like to discuss is I think Senator Dedzic had brought it up. There was some, I don't know how she would like to deal with it, but there was a misunderstanding with the MACV change to 1 year from 30 days. So was there a way that we wanted to deal with that? Do you want to change that now? Or
we can change that now or just continue discussing. I don't know what Senator Saxhog would like to do.
Madam Chair,
it's on page 19 for anybody who's looking.
It would be, Madam Chair and Senator Saxhog, it'd be a simple fix. We're just going to go back, I think, was it to the 30 days, Senator Dedzic, Madam Chair?
Yeah, we didn't have anything.
If you go on the, it's under the appropriation parts, I think it's what, page 19?
Madam Chair?
Yeah, page 19, line 19.15.
Senator Saxhog.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, if you want to propose amendments, you know, that this is right, this is the proper time to do it, I would say.
Yeah, and it was originally Senator Dedzic who, thank you, Senator Saxhog, it was originally the chair who had offered the amendment, so I wanted to give some deference to her. So if you wouldn't mind, Madam Chair, is it?
Yep. So I'll just explain. This is a grant that we heard, and there was I had some concern that the grant, the state money that we're providing for some grants and assistance state goes to, because this is a federal organization, and so they help people from all over, which I think is very good and appreciative. But I just wanted to make sure that the money that goes from Minnesota taxpayers helps Minnesota residents. And so we had a discussion, and then we've had further discussion. And so initially in state law, it currently says, I believe that they have to be resident for 30 days. And so we put it up to 1 year and then have since had discussions. And so I'm comfortable if others are putting it back to, you know, 30 days, if that's what the committee wishes.
Why?
We've had discussions with the Senator Russ. We've had discussions with the organization, and there are a very small number, they believe, very, very small number of veterans that may be from outside the state of Minnesota that are here.
They just happen to be the ones testifying.
Correct. but they want them, if they have to wait for a year, if they realize that the veterans are here for whatever reason and they are here, if they have to wait for a year before they can start helping, you know, they can be that slippery slide downward. So if they can start helping them within 30 days,
it helps. Madam Chair, I think we should go forward with that. And on line 915, I would move we strike 1 year and insert 30 days.
Okay. Does everybody understand Senator Russ's amendment? So going from 1 year back to 30 days.
It's
not changing the number. 1915. Yep. All in favor? Any more discussion on the amendment? Did we move the amendment?
I'll move.
Did I move? Okay. Senator Russ moves the amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Senator Metzen.
Broken the ice.
Yeah, are you?
Oh, I'm finished for now. Senator.
Okay. I wanted to take a look at this Compensation Council Article 7. I appreciate the fact that we're finally looking at this, and we've been losing a lot of very good department heads over the years, and I think it's, in my opinion, time to start paying these people more than they're already getting. But on the subdivision one on the legislative pay, I see it's 33% of the governor's salary. Now, I'm led to believe that the governor, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is not asking for a pay raise or is not going to take a pay raise. So that certainly affects that 33% what we get. Now, it's not our problem that he's not taking it. And if I'm correct, it should be the compensation's proposed figure for the governor, and not, because, I mean, anybody could say, well, I don't want it. Well, then that affects everybody else, and I don't think that's fair. I'd like an explanation of that, and if there could be some other wording as it relates to the percentage of what the compensation council recommended for him or her. It's him now. Does that make sense?
Yep. Is Mr. Schroeder available to come up and address us? Thank you.
Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Bob Schroeder. I'm an appointee of the Chief Justice to the Compensation Council, along with Tom Frazier. Tom is not with us today. Tom was the chair of the Compensation Council and sends his apologies for not being with you. Senator Metzen, to your question, thank you for that. And I should also point out that Senator Rest and Senator Cohen, who are on this committee, were also members of the Compensation Council. I think it's fair to say that I've heard something along the same lines as you have as well regarding Governor Dayton's interest or lack thereof in his salary. The Compensation Council understood that and tried to acknowledge that regardless of who the governor is and whether or not they accept an increase or not, that the salary increases for legislators would be tied to what's in statute, not what the individual chooses to accept.
Okay, then I think my question's been answered. I was misinformed, so I guess it would be on the proposed compensation of the governor.
Yeah. Madam Chair and Senator Metzen, yes, that's right. And I don't think you were misinformed. I think we'd heard similar things. So we had, in fact, a discussion about that point to make it, in fact, clear that it would be tied to what's in statute, not the individual's desire, okay. The individual in that office.
So I'm not, Madam Chair, I'm not the only one that has questioned that. Okay.
Senator Zalka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for clarification, I believe you sent me it may not have been you, but it was somebody that sent me a report showing that the governor's salary had not been increased in many years, and had it just simply followed the consumer price index, that number would be like $175,000 or something like that. I don't know if that was you that sent that to me, but some. Or,
yeah. Madam Chair, Senator, no, it was not me, but I think Mr. Hubinger might have sent that to you. It is true that the governor's salary, the office of the governor's salary, has not increased, I think, since 1998, so about 15 years. I don't know the math on it, but I would not think that that's too far off. And should point out that in the legislation, we have the salary increased by 3% and then tied to the CPI going forward on that basis. And the, you know, the platform along from which all these salaries really work is the governor, whether it's legislators, other constitutional officers, and the heads of state agencies. Starts with the salary of the governor, which would be increased 3%, tied to CPI, and then, for example, state agency heads, depending on what group they fall into, it would be 133% or 120%. Legislators, it would be 33%, and then constitutional officers would remain at the current percentage that's in salary in statute now, but increased by that 3%. Hope that makes sense.
Senator Chamberlain.
I'm not sure if Senator Rest had something. I want to go back to something else. And Senator Rest,
I just have an amendment.
Well, Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to respond to Senator Chamberlain's comment relative to policy in the finance bills. You know, there's not a hard and fast rule. I mean, it's certainly not a Senate rule. Everybody at the table knows that. We've tried to be relatively careful in terms of using the omnibus finance bills to pile everything in. In looking through this bill, not quite, but I think almost everything is clearly tied to dollars, which would allow for policy language. Obviously, before the bills are heard in front of the full Finance Committee, I'll have discussions with the chairs, you know, prior to that, and I'll ask, you know, have some questions. I think generally we're doing decently. It's not perfection. I, to be honest with you, had I won't say a fight, that'd be too strong of a word, had a discussion with people from the Education Division about the intent to have only one bill. And I think for the most part, they're backing off. I think they'll have a policy bill as well as the finance bill. So this is not meant to be a hard and fast rule. Certainly, I think some of the folks around the table, Senator Stumpf could tell you that we've come a long ways from where we might have been X number of years ago in terms of having bills like this that were just filled with policy. You'll back me up on that, won't you?
Madam Chair, Senator Cohen, yes, the notorious Christmas tree bills used to be pretty common years ago. And it got so bad that some of the bills were almost like encyclopedias.
They were good encyclopedias.
Which one of you two? Senator Rest.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I have the A1 amendment.
Pass it out. Senator Rest, do you want to describe the amendment while they're passing it out?
Sure. When Mr. Schroeder made the presentation from the Compensation Council, then as now, he indicated that there are legislator members on it, and I'm one of them. Senator Cohen's one of them, Senator Miller. Sure. And I, at the Compensation Council meeting itself, as well as in that hearing, indicated my discomfort with the fact that with regard to the Supreme Court, none of the Supreme Court justices are on the Compensation Council. With regard to the executive branch, the governor's not on it. But with regard to the legislative branch, legislators are on it. And all of the other two branches have representatives that they pick, that they choose, such as Mr. Schroeder. And it seemed to me that that was a good that'd be a good model in the future for the legislature, that we have people on it that we choose, minority party, majority party, but that it's unseemly to have legislators on it. So that my amendment removes them.
Madam Chair, if I might just address the amendment to Senator Ress's point, and just to simply state that, of course, it's the prerogative of the legislature to determine who they would like to have represent their interests. But on behalf of the Compensation Council, this was a discussion point. All heads nodded. We did not make a formal action on this suggestion, but I'd be very surprised if there was any opposition whatsoever.
And Madam Senator Chair, what happened in the Compensation Council is that with regard to legislators' salaries, there was one legislator who voted no, but the rest of us that were there abstained. And if that's going to be the model on when this group gets together on legislator salaries, well, then it seems to me that we should change the model.
And Madam Chair, I'd agree.
Madam Chair, I would consider this to be a constructive amendment. All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Alan, any other discussion on Senator Russ' amendment?
Aye.
All right, okay. All in favor of Senator Russ' amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Amendment passes. Right. I think Senator Chamberlain had his hand up. Did you have any further discussion? You had your hand up earlier, so I was waiting to see if you had any other.
Correct. Oh, no, this is another issue, okay. Madam Chair.
Senator Gazalka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question on page 70, the auto theft prevention account. We've had a lot of discussion on this in commerce over the years. These dollars they come off an auto insurance policy when somebody pays a premium. 50 cents goes into this account. Its primary focus is fraud prevention, and yet over the years, for a number of times, we've raided this account. And if you've talked to Senator Reinert or others, this is a pet peeve of many of ours, is if we're going to have the fund for auto insurance to take care of fraud, then why do we take the first $1,300,000 go into the general fund before we even address it? So I would like that addressed.
Okay. Is there someone from the Department of Revenue here? Welcome to the committee. State your name and...
Madam Chair, members, for the record, my name is Terry Steenblock, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Individual Taxes. The language that you see here is just simply taking the language that is in public safety and commerce language, and it's literally moving it over here. There hasn't been any other changes made to the language, with exception to moving it, authorizing the Department of Revenue to continue the efforts that we're currently doing through a service level agreement with the other agency.
But do you know why, Ms. Steenbuck, do you know why they take the $1.3 million off the top right away?
What do they do with it?
I do not know the history of why they take the $1.3 off the top, but I can do some checking and follow back up.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I've got some language somewhere. I must be in Senator Tomasoni's committee that puts this money where I think it belongs, and they were willing to tax themselves so we could get at that auto theft issue. And then, like Senator Kosaka said, that we've been raiding that fund, or somebody has for years, and I've got language that we're checking on right now. If it's up in Thomas Honey's committee.
Yeah, I've been told by our assistant here that it is in Senator Tomasoni's jurisdiction.
I'm not totally cracking up because I know I'm trying to bring that money back to where it belongs, and the people were willing to tax themselves to for the issue of fraud. So I agree with Senator Kosaka and others.
Where's this language come from?
Senator Ross,
I don't know
this language was literally moving it from Department of Public Safety. They were not actually collecting the revenue. Department of Revenue was actually collecting it, and so we're just shifting it over since they were collecting it anyway. So it's language that was in Public Safety is my understanding.
So it's no change in policy, Madam Chair?
Correct. That's my understanding. Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know, or does anyone know, what they actually do with the money?
Ms. Steenblock.
I am sorry, I do not know, but I'm going to move.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we have somebody who thinks they know the answer.
All righty. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, Chairman, members of the committee, I didn't expect to be testifying on this this afternoon, but I'll pull from my memory. The 1.3 was taken, I'm going to guess, I'm sorry, John Kingry on behalf of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Thank you, Senator. My memory is that this money was initially taken, the 1.3 was taken, I'm going to just say about 8 years ago, to pay for the budget deficit that existed at that time. And that was continued over time. That's my recollection of the history. The money goes to pay for the increased cost of auto prevention theft in a number of offices. These are grants, county attorney offices. These are grants that are put out. Most of it does go for law enforcement to purchase cars that may be stolen and then they're photographed. They're used, I know in some cases, those things they pull, they put in front of cars that are that they're chasing, but it's a lot of it is for law enforcement. It's for increased costs of focusing on auto theft, and again, it's a competitive grant system. And the 1.3 again was taken, I'm going to guess, about 8 years ago to pay for the deficit at that time.
Thank you, Senator Stumpf.
Madam Chair, I think there's. We just renewed some of our auto insurance, and in the office, they have looks like GPS, small GPS sending units that you can put in your car someplace. And it'd be a whole lot cheaper almost to buy everybody one of those units, put it in their vehicle.
You don't want to know where everybody's
at. Everybody wants them.
Nobody wants them.
It's voluntary right now.
But if your car is stolen.
There's more to it than a car, bro.
Senator Rusk.
Madam Chair, do we show the effect of that transfer on the spreadsheet?
No, we don't. This was a governor's rec. We're not actually changing anything with where the dollars are going. The money comes in, it goes into the special revenue account, and then half of it is transferred to the general fund. It's current law.
So if we deleted that, what happens to it?
Well,
the transfer.
Well, I think if we deleted this language, then the transfer wouldn't happen to the general fund. It would also be a cost to our bill of $1.3 million.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
So if we do nothing, it doesn't affect the bottom line. If we start messing with it, particularly deleting the transfer to the general fund, then there is a problem. But, you know, Madam Chair, it seems like a solution in search of a problem that really doesn't exist anymore, other than the fact that we have, I mean, we do have a deficit, but at some point that should be re-examined, that transfer.
Madam Chair,
Senator Metzen.
There is a problem. that exists. We're not. We've heard from the county attorneys. We've heard from the sheriffs, and they need this money. Okay. And they didn't want it raided, and they're asking. We had two or three county attorneys come up and testify. That we should not have taken it away in the first place. It's a very important tool for them, and they need the money, and we have sheriffs testified, so it is, the need is there. And gosh darn it, that's why the people were paying this under premiums to work on the theft. And the, so that there is a need out there.
Thank you. Senator Chamberlain, did you have a question on this?
Madam Chair, when we're finished with this, I just want to make sure I jumped in. I misunderstood you last time.
Sorry. Right. Yes, no, Mr. Kingrey.
And Chair, let me give you just one more very, very quick example. About 3 or 4 days ago, there was a high-speed chase right out here on University Avenue. That high-speed chase was after an individual that had stolen a car from Minneapolis. The police identified it as a stolen car because the license plate reader that was on that law enforcement vehicle, that license plate reader was bought with auto prevention theft money. And it was a high-speed chase right out here going about 60 miles an hour, but it was identified as a stolen vehicle because of the license plate reader on that law enforcement car that was purchased with these funds.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions on this topic? If not, I will ask Senator Saxhog, and I'm also on that committee, so we will make sure this is addressed in Senator Tomasoni's committee. That's okay?
I think that'll be fine.
Okay.
Madam Chair, we'll get the money from
yes.
his committee and not this
yes.
one.
Yes, correct.
I get it.
Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry I misunderstood earlier. This goes back to the compensation piece, page 76, line 76.26. Is brought to our attention that language, striking that language, might cause a little trouble. It's a pure policy piece, so striking that language being pure policy, it would appear that this means then that this put a limit on certain salaries and wages. In other words, it looks from reading this, it appears that it would prevent employees of an agency from earning more than the agency head. That's how I read it, and counsel and others could correct me if I'm wrong. But by striking this, it looks like we could be opening up a lot of different issues here. And being a pure policy piece, you know, I know there's dollars and stuff in this other part here, but perhaps we can just reinstate that language.
Senator Chamberlain, is this the language on 76.26?
Yeah, through 76.31.
Chair?
Yes, Senator Ross.
I'd like counsel to explain what the impact of reinstating the stricken language would be relative to this article. And if it's if there is other language in it that addresses the issue
I'll also ask if Mr. Schroeder wants to discuss this too.
Mr. Schroeder would like to talk to address that issue.
Yep. Thank you. All right. Welcome to the committees. Thank you. State your name for the record, please.
My name is Jim Lee. I'm with the Minnesota Management and Budget. The language that's being stricken on page 76, line 26, is a secondary limit on the salaries of employees. The primary limit on our salaries are the pay ranges that the legislature approves in the form of collective bargaining agreements and compensation plans. So it's a bit of a redundancy, and it's caused us problems because of the lack of adjustment in agency head salaries over the last 13 years.
Ms. James, do you have anything different or additional?
Madam Chair, members, in response to Senator Rest's question, I would just note that if Section 8 is removed, then we would also need to remove the repealer on page 78, lines 3 and 4, because they go together.
What if you just add in the deleted language? How does that do?
Madam Chair, do you mean on line 76?
Got it, yeah.
Okay.
And so, Madam Chair, as I understand it then, from the gentleman, then Mr. Lee, that if we strike this language, we still have in place, no, we reinstate this language, we have a complicating issue with regard to the salary ranges that are dealt with elsewhere with regard to collective bargaining agreements. If this language is remained to be stricken, then the salary ranges will be guided by the salary ranges in the collective bargaining agreements that are a formula for determining these executive branch employees. Do I understand that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct.
So I think it's kind of redundant language that's being stricken and a complicating factor that probably needs to stay stricken.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree. I just want to put a fine point on this, is that to the testifier, so you're saying it's causing complications and problems. I understand the primary constraint, the collective bargaining agreements. So bear with me for a moment, having just seen this. Could you just give a brief example of how this complicated it? I'm just trying to get a fine point and clearly understand it.
Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair, Senator, in the managerial plan as a compensation plan for unrepresented managers, we have several pay ranges that actually exceed the $108,000 level that the major agency heads are at. And those pay ranges can't be fully utilized because the incumbents in those positions are subject to this language. But the Legislative Subcommittee on Employee Relations and the full legislature have approved ranges that go up to about $125,000 for those positions, but they can't go that far.
Oh, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So for these, that's why this would have to go, because it would keep them lower than what we've already approved.
Right, and Madam Chair.
Oh, I got you. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, any other questions on that? Senator Anderson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lee.
On page 77 of the compensation study, was that detailed on the spreadsheet, Mr. Lundeen?
Yes. Mr. Lundeen.
Yes, there is $200,000 for that study. Under the rider, under MMB, the $2.5 million, it does say of that amount, $200,000 is for this study.
Thank you.
Senator Rust.
I hope we continue to do that. One of the issues in discussing the compensation for everybody was how hard it was to get a handle on. The salaries are clear, but to get a handle on the compensation that includes the benefits and to understand what that is relative to positions in the private sector, that was very difficult, and a lot of guessing and estimating in trying to understand that, and in particular with regard to understanding the total compensation for legislators with regard to pension benefits and how the pensions are set up, and private sector, there's been a real move toward defined contribution as opposed to defined benefit, and that perhaps a study like this would give us much more meaningful, not that the information we had was inaccurate, but much more meaningful information. So I think it's a pretty worthwhile thing to proceed with.
Any other questions or comments? Senator Saksok, or Senator Ames.
Are you talking of this subject, or are you just in general?
Both.
In general, the Article 2, the Minnesota Sunset legislation, I see that's being repealed, and Madam Chair, I'd just like to have the input from the author as to, and Senator Saksok could share that information with me.
Certainly, Madam Chair, and Senator Deans, as I've stated before, although there's no question about it, there was some very positive input given by the Sunset Commission when it was working. It kind of tended to pick some of the lower hanging fruit, some of the smaller commissions, and I think as we were talking, and I think Ms. James is the one that said something about it. The larger commissions and departments of the state government are the next ones to be taken on by the Sunset Commission. I'm not sure we have given the time that we put in committee and the committee work that's done. I'm not sure that we have the time nor the money to take care of that, and that's why the Sunset Commission was.
Is Craig Hubinger here for any comments on that? Senator Rust.
I think that the mission of the Sunset Commission, and we dealt with a lot of their findings in the Legislative Audit Commission as well, were well intended, but the it really was an overburden on staff without any funding for them, and the whole, you know, in Texas they have one of these things, and they have like, I don't know, 50, 60 people who are employed who do these regular reviews, and we had, you know, 10 legislators doing it and one staff person. And then I guess for me, philosophically, the Sunset Commission was taking over responsibilities that belong with the policy committees and the standing committees. If we think on this committee that a particular agency that is under the purview of this committee is outlived its usefulness, we should make that determination as the State Department's and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee and stop funding them and get rid of them. And we shouldn't need that second level of overview because, you know, somehow we didn't do our job. So I think repealing it puts the onus back where it belongs, and that is on standing committees of the legislature to do their job with regard to oversight of state agencies.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I had the, I guess it's a privilege to be on the Sunset Commission. Senator Bonhoff and at the time Representative Kiffmeyer were the chair and co-chair, and we looked at Texas and found that they had saved, I forget the numbers now, but certainly hundreds of millions, maybe $1 billion over a period of years, because they were looking at each group, and they did have more people, and that, you know, clearly is maybe the direction I would have preferred we've gone, because what it did bring, even, you know, we did the initial ones because they were easier, and it was to begin to build a track record on how do we do this, I found it brought a level of accountability when a group of legislators were focusing on just a few different places, and they had to come and present, you know, why they are still doing this or that. And a number of them were woefully unprepared as far as a balance sheet and how, you know, individual expense, itemized expenses. And it really forced them to be much more accountable. And that was really the, I think, one of the main reasons we wanted to do it is, you know, having a chance to really dig a little deeper than we do on a session basis. And so, you know, my hope is that we keep it. There was a real benefit, and just to throw it away after we actually started moving forward, I think would be a loss.
Senator
Ames. Well, I just wanted to make an oral amendment that we would remove the language in the bill that strikes the Sunset, ending the Sunset Commission. And I would ask Council to put up the appropriate language for that amendment, but I would like to move that oral amendment. I think it's important that we keep this, and I think it can accomplish things, and I think that it did accomplish things previously, and I would like to see it move forward.
Any discussions?
And, Madam Chair, I guess my comment would be that for for the reasons that I think Senator Rest outlined very nicely, that at this particular time, I don't think that that the Sunset Commission is fulfilling what it was thought to fulfill. And for that reason, I would ask people to not vote for this amendment.
Senator Zaka.
Madam Chair, I'd like a roll call on this.
Okay, Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, just to follow up on a few items. I, for better or worse, I authored this legislation in the previous years. But the numbers that Senator Kasalka mentioned were, I did look at the research for Texas. It was over $1 billion they saved over a period of years. This can be effective, and very rarely do we can we adequately judge something after 1 year. And this was implemented, and like they said, it was tried at with some smaller committees, agencies, and we need to, I would suggest that that's a learning platform to go forward. The cost here could, we got some significant increases in some other areas in the budget here. Just to the legislature itself, a 10% increase, and I'm not quite sure what that is, but we can talk about that later. Just taking some of that money and putting it back to the Sunset Commission could get us back up and running, and so we can maintain it. It's a system of accountability. It forces us to focus on something, as Senator Gazelka had mentioned. Removing it after 1 year is premature. And, I've sat on three committees, and on the other two committees, we must have created six or seven task force and advisory committees. And we even had a lady come up in K-12 and beg us not to do it again, literally, at the table. So I would say with all the committees and advisory committees we create around here to restudy property taxes and other things, I think this one would have the greatest impact because we'd actually be doing something and protecting taxpayer money, and we could find money just out of the Senate appropriation and shifting some dollars around. But I would support it. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I think the last thing I would say is that we also have the Office of Legislative Auditor does a fine job of looking after our well-being in terms of the different offices.
I would like to ask Mr. Lindeen, what does this do to our adopted spreadsheet?
Well, the spreadsheet does take into account cutting the base appropriations for the Sunset Commission of $139,000 a year, which is $278,000 that need to be accounted for somewhere else in the bill.
Hey, Senator Chamberlain.
$278,000 out of this legislative budget, small shift.
Get a number here for the legislative increases.
Auto theft.
Number here for the legislative increase is $12 million. Is that the, well, that's the total budget? Anyway, it's significant. It was a 10% increase. About $3,800 for the $3.8 million for the Senate, which is a 9% increase. So
somebody get paid or something.
Really shift some money around. We don't need, I don't know what's that. We'll talk about it later, but that's a lot of money. I don't know where it's going to go for this Senate.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, I hate to go back to the good old days, but when I chaired this committee originally, we did sunset work with the committee and with the committee staff. We did it during the interim periods, and over the several years, we looked at not all, but I think almost all of the agencies within the jurisdiction of the committee, and we actually made some significant differences. There were a couple of divisions we rearranged. There were a couple of divisions I think we eliminated and shifted responsibilities elsewhere. We reflected the work done during the interim in the next budget. So I'm not sure. If the legislature wants to do it, the legislature can do it. And this committee can certainly do that work. If Senator Saxhog wants to direct it during the interim period, I don't know that we need a commission to do it. A commission that has 50, 60 people working for it.
Madam Chair, just to mention, Senator Cohen, so when I chaired the Governmental Operations Committee many years ago, we abolished probably 25 to 30 boards and commissions, and we called them in, and some hadn't met for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and so we did, I'm guessing, about 30, 35. So It can be done, and it has been done, and I've done it, and Senator Cohn has done it, and others have done it, so it's not a new phenomena here. So.
Okay. So in discussion with council, if we just delete Article 2 and then renumber the articles accordingly, that's the sunset article. So Senator Dames, if there's any other discussion, Senator Dames moves to delete Article 2 and renumber the articles accordingly, and a roll call has been requested. Start with Senator Saxhog.
Take the roll. Senator Saxhog.
No.
Senator Dietzick.
No.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Anderson.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
No.
Senator Cohen.
No.
Senator Dames.
Yes.
Senator Gazelka.
Yes.
Senator Metzen.
No.
Senator Rust. Senator Stumpf.
No. So there being four yes and seven no's, the motion does not prevail. Any other discussion on the bill?
I have a question.
Senator Dames.
Madam Chair, I do have a question on the spreadsheet on line starting with 851.
And then we have the dollars listed. Can you or Senator Saxhog tell me where that's in the bill, or maybe council could tell me where the that is referred to in the bill here?
Okay, could you say that again? Page 851.
Just curious where that information ties into the bill.
I believe it is on page 16.8.
That's what I wanted to know where it was at. Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were talking, it'll be back in the spreadsheet. We had some, I was talking to some people earlier, and did, Madam Chair, Senator Saxhog, did we, for the legislative budget, lines 6 through 9, did we actually discuss these increases and detail those and in committee? I may have missed a day, but if we haven't, 9-10% increases, I'm wondering if we could kind of review what that entails.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, I didn't hear which lines he was talking about.
Madam Chair and Senator Saxhog, just the front page, line 7, 8, and 9 on the legislative budget.
If Ms. Zoft is available to come up and discuss the Senate budget. Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record, please.
Madam Chair, my name is Joanne Zoff. I'm the Secretary of the Senate.
I believe the question was on the discussion on the budget. I remember when she was here earlier, this is just my two cents in here, when she was here earlier, I know we had a hefty discussion on the status of the computer systems in the Senate, because I believe we were following up mine. You can literally hear it dial up. So I know that we did have somewhat of a discussion on some of the needs in the Senate office. If Ms. Zoff can go over, or Senator Saxhog, more on the budget.
Well, let me start out, Madam Chair, by reflecting on the fact that, as you said, during testimony, we have noted, and of course, those of us, and I'm assuming it's all of us, that have our 10-year-old computers understand that there's some real IT upgrades that need to be made. So this is a reflection of that. It's also a reflection of staff that haven't had any type of a compensation increase in quite a number of years. Ms. Zoff can probably, Secretary Zoff can probably even bring that a little more up to date.
Madam Chair, members, I think it's fair to say that the components of the increase to the Senate budget would, as Senator Dedzic and Senator Saxhog mentioned at the outset, what we have been sorely lacking over the last several years, as the Senate budget and the other legislative budgets, the LCC budget and the House budget, have been cut substantially over the last several years. And consequently, speaking for the Senate, most Senate employees have not had salary increases since 2008. There's another problem in that to the extent that we have promotional tracks within the Senate, if there are job classes where people within those classes would be eligible for promotions after they have achieved a different level of competency and they've been in a particular position for a number of years, we suspended the operation of that promotional system also at the end of 2008. And that's created a tremendous compression problem for people who are still making the same salary that they got when they came in the door in 2008. And we bring in new people. Typically, I think virtually everyone that we hired this year into new positions in the Senate, we brought in at the start of the salary ranges, even if they had experience in other state agencies or other private enterprises, we were only able to bring them in at the bottom of the range. So there's quite a compression problem going on in the Senate, and it's exacerbated for those who haven't had the promotions. So we certainly are looking to be able to create a better situation for staff retention and encouraging people to take these positions. In addition to that, there's been a lot of discussion about the deficiencies of the computer systems. They're very old. We're very slow to replace them. We kind of wait until something is totally broken down before we're able to replace the members and the staff's computers. Another very expensive component to our system is the Senate Media Services. They're in need of new equipment. I think you saw a couple of days ago that the system was breaking down, and we wait until there's kind of a crisis before we replace the equipment because it's very expensive. They're also going to need to do a kind of a wholesale conversion from the current system into the digital age, which is going to cost a great deal of money. So there are some real needs that I think are pretty well known to all the members of the Senate and the staff, and that's what we're going to try to address with this money.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Zoff. Are these items listed in the budget book? Are they there? I don't necessarily disagree with the need. I'm just wondering if we saw it and we discussed it, and there's a line item where there's just $3.8 million sprinkled down on the budget somewhere. But I'm just trying to be accountable here to try to find out what the detail is of those items and how much the IT upgrades do we think they're going to cost.
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, that's a good question. Historically, the details of the Senate budget have been taken care of within the Rules Committee. And so, there's a subcommittee on the budget, and it's got the line items, everything. Now, you know, should we run that? I mean, that's a legitimate question. Should we run everything through this division as opposed to the Rules Committee? But certainly in terms of the details, whether it's now Senator Bach chairing it or, you know, when it was Senator Koch, Senator Senjum, whoever the chairman of the Rules Committee has been, has always appointed a subcommittee on the budget. And that's where the real detailed work has usually taken place. But it's done as part of the committee process. And again, your question is maybe one we ought to consider at some point. Do we just do everything through here and run line items through here, as might be the case with other budgets? But there is I just want to make it clear, there is a place in the Senate where that does happen.
Yeah. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, I appreciate the explanation, Senator Cohen. I do. I understand some things through the Senate committee, but we're obviously $12 million in extra money here. Out of the whole budget isn't a lot, but obviously we're also being asked to vote for it and vote on it, and we're being asked to look at all these other items. We got a budget book with all those items in it, and I don't know, do we have the is that in the budget book or no? Okay, so this item is not in the budget book. It's $12 million, and so I'm voting on something that I have no idea what that $12 million is, and so I don't. I appreciate your comments and your explanation, but I don't accept the premise. We're this $12 million budget. But thank you,
Senator Cohen.
Madam Chair, Senator Chamberlain, you raise a good point. I mean, because obviously, if we're going to pass a Senate budget or a legislative budget, an LCC budget, we have to pass it in a budget bill. I guess one way is, if the Rules Committee retained jurisdiction, maybe you would simply pass a separate legislative budget bill as opposed to doing it in State Departments. So I recognize what you're suggesting relative to maybe the awkwardness of what you suggest. On the other hand, this is a comment, maybe a little bit of field of what your direct question is, but one of the fights I've had with administrations over the years is the amount of information we get in our budget pages decreases, it seems, year after year after year. And if I go back to when I was originally on appropriations in the House, much less finance in the Senate, we'd have budget books with just a huge amount of information, and it decreases. And it's been an ongoing fight I've had, and I think at this point I pretty well have given up. Because, our budget pages this year have less information than the budget pages 2 years ago, and certainly 4 and 6 years ago. So it's not a partisan comment, obviously. It just it's what's been going on. Well, and Madam Chair, Senator Rest makes the comment about the new accounting system, which has I believe that's what you'd indicated, which has made a difference. But accounting system or not, that's been an ongoing fight that the legislature's had with administrations.
Senator Rest.
There's only so much you can do to fight the accounting systems.
Madam Chair?
Except not let them start another new one.
Senator Sackett.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
I
guess the first, what I'd say is that, as I said in my opening comments, we were given a target. I think that most of us are familiar with targets, and we're pretty much right on that target. So,
Senator Stump.
Madam Chair and Senator Chamberlain, we actually did have a hearing on this.
We did hear?
Yeah.
And did they tell us what the $12 million was for?
We had Ms. Gaugh, you presented before this committee and talked about how the inability to hire people and also about the computers. I believe we had Mr. Greenwald testify. I don't know exactly what date that occurred, but I remember listening to your presentations and would attest that I think the last time we had a replacement in computers was quite a few years ago. I imagine it must have been about 8-10 years ago.
Madam Chair, Senator Sumpf, you're correct. I was here, and representatives from the LCC also testified, and we basically had the same points to make in terms of difficulty, in terms of staff retention and recruitment becoming an issue, and then a number of the members did raise questions about replacement of their computers and of the system itself in general.
And at that hearing, we also found out that, Madam Chair, your computer was totally unworkable.
this.
Yes, it was. Senator Timberland.
And one final comment. I don't disagree with the necessity or the concept of the idea, and I understand that there's a lot of pages here that we could actually be seeing. I know we had a big, fat budget book, which was quite impressive, and I looked at it many times, but it's not even, this part is not even in a budget book. So I'm not opposed to the idea of spending money to upgrade and do necessary upgrades, but a final comment, I swear I'll be quiet, Senator Saxog, but to say we had a target, yeah, well, we had some extra money left over, so where do we go with it? So that's my concern, but that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Ms. Hoff, before you leave, so does this level bring us back up to any place in the past in funding, especially on, again, the IT upgrades potential?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, are you asking if the level of the appropriation in overall?
For the Senate budget, yes.
For the Senate budget, the appropriation that's being recommended is at the level of 22,633, and
I know there was cuts.
There have been cuts, Madam Chair. That brings us not quite. That brings us to roughly the level that we were at in 2010. There were years preceding that where the Senate budget had been at a higher level than that. So it's somewhat less than we've had in some years in the past. And there were also some years where we got additional appropriations strictly for IT upgrades and that sort of thing. So there were some additional monies in the past.
Have we been making cuts off and on to the Senate budget since about 2003, is my understanding?
Madam Chair, the highest appropriation for general purposes that I see in 2003 was 22.9, and then it was cut substantially the following year. It was down to $19 million for each of the next 2 years, a reduced amount beyond that in 2006. But over the last, certainly since 2010, or since 2009, there's been a steady reduction. And over those years as well, there were times when the Senate gave money back to the state budget. So there's been a steady decline in the amount that's been appropriated to the Senate over the previous years.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments? Thank you, Ms. Off. Any further amendments on the bill? Any further discussion on the bill?
Make a motion.
Well, I thought maybe I thought maybe the author of the bill would like to make a motion.
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move that Senate file to be jacketed and introduced by myself. Styled as SC9297-6 document as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance, and that Senate staff be authorized to incorporate into the Senate file any technical and conforming changes to reflect the changes to the spreadsheet and amendments adopted in the division meeting of 4-9-13.
All right. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carries.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Saxog, Senator Saxog.
You're calling for announcements of the day, and members, Thursday we're going to hear three bonding requests, begin our discussions on legacy funding. We will try to be done by 4:45 so members of the full Finance Committee can attend that meeting. Any other questions? If not, I'd turn it over to you, Madam Chair, to adjourn.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.